Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found on Blog Talk Radio Network. It is Wednesday, December 14th, 2022, the second Wednesday of December. Just a mere, 18 days left in this month, something like that, 17, 18, depending on how you count them. Anyway, wow, time has flown, has it not? It sure has. Hey, well, as I said, I am Hank Jones. It is Wednesday, December 14th, 2022. And I am sitting here in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost with my little Aussie. My wife is working over in Acoustic Hank Land, of course. We're here every day at Global Patriot Radio. I can prove it. Every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, Eric is in with the Cross and Crescent discussion. I'm here, of course, at 5:30 on Wednesdays. Thursdays at 6 o'clock, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays at noon Eastern time, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern until midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is back. Real Interfaith Dialogue, which, of course, is a continuation of, I wasn't lying, every day we are here. Today's first Internet Laffy. Not even sure where credit goes, but Vito had it as a revolving banner on the show last week. And I thank Vito again for taking over for me last week. This laugh, he says, tapping oil reserves instead of drilling is as stupid as tapping your 401k instead of going to work. I'm not sure why I'm laughing. That's not funny in a sense, because there are people that live like that and believe that and actually give credence to that kind of thought that, well, what the hell? I'll just tap my 401k. Why go to work? Yeah. Believe it or not. I'm going to recap some old bits that Vito covered, but I just felt I should give a couple of tributes. December 1st, we lost Major League Hall of Fame pitcher Gaylord Perry at the age of 84. He was really noted as much for his doctoring of his pitches as his actual pitches. And in addition to that, he was also known really more for his psychological effect as the actual effect of doctoring the ball. I mean, evidently, Reggie Jackson actually got ejected from a game one time after, you know, flailing on a pitch and a Perry pitch and went ballistic, and he actually got ejected. Perry never got ejected from a game until the 1980s. Anyway, he was 84. He contracted COVID in 2021, never fully recovered. And then December 3rd, I know Vito didn't cover this, we lost former American middle distance runner Tony Waldrop. Tony Waldrop died after a lengthy illness at age 70. He was the first person to break the four-minute mile at the Wanamaker Games, or the Wanamaker Mile at the Millrose Games. Actually held the indoor mile record for a while at 3:55. Had one attempt at making the Olympics at the 1972 trials. He said the pressure made the whole thing no fun, so he never tried after that. He actually retired from competition after the 1976 indoor season. That same day, we also lost adult film actor Tyler Roberts, age not listed, to a heart attack. Best left, leave the rest of that unsaid. Hey, by the way, there are several ways you can interact with us here. During the show, you can log in to the website and just listen. You can also go to the live button and pick chatters, and you can go in there and you'll see Global Patriot Radio. So you can interact in our chat room. Uncle Frank 1 is in there right now. Indy normally is in there as well. Others like Vito stop by and Holger, but Indy I know is out, not available tonight. So or you can call in. 319-527-6706. When you do that, you can listen in. You just listen in. And then if you want to talk, you hit the 1. I get this cute little hand-raised icon that tells me someone wants to talk, because hopefully Hawkeye Mike will be doing that a little bit when we get to our discussions. Anyway, back to the obits. Monday the 5th, we lost Kirstie Alley. I know Vito paid her great tribute. I didn't know her. Why would I? But I did follow her on Twitter the last several years. She was a good follow. She really was. She was very brave being a conservative in Hollywood, but she was also pretty interesting just as a person. It's a sad loss, and she was really a class person. And so I wanted to pay her some tribute. You know, she was funny. She was sexy, yes, but she was funny, and she was a good actress, you know, for what she did. I mean, she never set out to be this Oscar-winning actress, never claimed she was or anything like that. She did well at what she did. Tuesday the 6th, we lost a boxing referee, a TV judge, an actual district judge for a while in Nevada, Mills Lane. He was 85. Remember him? Let's get it on! He'd meet with the boxers in the center of the ring. Let's get it on! Very animated, but a good referee, very well respected. He had several strokes, at least one in the last several years, and so he had been in failing health for a while. On the 7th of December, we lost bartender Harry Yee, at the age of 104. He was noted for extending tiki bar culture beyond the state of Hawaii. And in fact, he invented the drink known as the Blue Hawaii. No, not the Blue Hawaiian. That came along decades later. He invented the drink, the original drink, the Blue Hawaii. Anyway, he passed away at 104. I think you have to kind of note that. Last Friday, we lost American hero, former Air Force pilot and explorer Joe Kittinger, to lung cancer at age 94. I never knew Joe Kittinger, but I actually did know his brother Jack very well, in fact. Jack was a salt of the earth, just a great guy. Jack was a businessman in the Orlando area, but more importantly, he was a great community volunteer and servant. Jack did pass away several years ago, and Joe was at the memorial service for him. Joe Kenny was known for his air exploits, high-altitude exploration, including, high-altitude balloon flights. He was also the first man to fully witness the curvature of the Earth. If you didn't know that, I know I didn't. Yeah, he was the first man to fully witness the curvature of the Earth. Think about that for a second. He was also the first man to, or the first person to fly solo across the Atlantic in a gas balloon. You should have known that because that made headlines when he did it. He was also a fighter pilot during the Vietnam War, spent 11 months as a POW there after being shot down. In 1984, he did his Atlantic flight. And then in 2012, he participated as a capsule communicator in the project in which Felix Baumgartner broke the world record for longest free fall from Earth's stratosphere, 24 miles, which, by the way, broke the record Joe Kittinger held for 53 years. So, yeah, true hero, Joe Kittinger. Saturday, we lost soccer journalist Grant Wall. Saturday, Grant Wall, age 48, from an aortic aneurysm. Now, what's scary about that to me, my son-in-law was rushed, I should say, my daughter rushed my son-in-law to the hospital several months ago with what turned out to be, in part, he had a valve issue, but also an aortic aneurysm at 33. So, yeah, kind of scary. Anyway, Grant Wall suffered the event while in the press area. They did try to get help, but he did not survive. We also lost former NBA player and coach Paul Silas to cardiac arrest at age 79. He won three NBA championships as a player, two with the Celtics and one with the Supersonics from Seattle, back when they had a team. Monday the 12th, we had several losses. This first one is just really sad. Mike Leach. Mike Leach was the head football coach at Mississippi State. He had a heart attack over the weekend and just never pulled through. He was a truly unique individual. First of all, with Hal Mumme, while they were both at Iowa Wesleyan University, they helped pioneer the air raid offense back in the 80s. As a head coach, he led an unranked team to a win over an AP-ranked team 18 times. That's the most by any coach in the AP poll era. Just a really interesting guy. He got kind of a raw deal at Texas Tech. He even had his lawsuit thrown out, but he got a raw deal there, but, you know, he moved on and did quite well at Mississippi State. Very sad loss. They've got a bowl game coming up, and they've announced that one of their assistants has taken over. But this is tough on players. You know, coaches leaving, that's tough. Players leaving or whatever, that's tough. But a coach dying, you know, it's hard enough when it happens on a season. In season like this, just tragic. Just a sad, sad thing. And tributes have come in from all over the place. Now, another guy, another loss. This guy was less known than Mike Leach. But a bigger loss to me personally, that of actor Stuart Margolin, best known for his portrayal of Angel Martin on the Rockford Files. He won 2 Emmy Awards for that role, by the way. He got his start in some minor roles, but also some crucial ones. He's the guy who gives Charles Bronson's character his first gun in the original Death Wish. He did appearances on MASH, Partridge Family, that was a screamer, That Girl. He's probably familiar also to many of you for his appearances on those between sketch skits that they did on Love American Style, which, by the way, was created in part by his older brother, Arnold Margolin. Anyway, and also, despite appearing together as husband and wife in the pilot for the TV series Lanigan's Rabbi, he and actress Janet Margolin were not related. Yesterday, we had a couple more. Former Phillies, Cardinals, Cubs, and Angels pitcher Kurt Simmons died at 93. Won a World Series with the Cardinals, several NL pennants with the Phillies. He was the last surviving member of the Phillies teams from the 1940. And he was the last surviving member of their 1950 NL pennant-winning team. We also lost Stephen Twitch Boss, who was a DJ and co-producer of The Ellen Show. Took his own life yesterday by gunshot at 40. Obviously tragic. And finally, we lost former academic administrator at University of Iowa, President Willard Boyd, Sandy Boyd, at age 95. He was the president when I arrived at the University of Iowa in 1980. The Boyd Law Building at the school is named in his honor. He was actually very crucial in his supportive role during the Hayden Fry turnaround of the Iowa football program. Prior to Hayden Fry's arrival, Hawkeyes had almost 20 years of non-winning football seasons, and he had been viewed. Willard Boyd had been viewed by previous coaches and by some supporters as one who was against sports at the college level. But on the hiring of Hayden Fry, he went along with Hayden Fry and AD Bump Elliott on the idea that a successful program was essential to overall university success. Guess what? All three were right. Bump Elliott was right with the hire of Hayden Fry, for sure. Hayden Fry was right in believing that the Iowa fan base was very supportive, no matter how the team did. God, he would bid if he saw what's on some of our message boards nowadays. And Sandy Boyd was right to support Hayden Fry and to say that, yeah, we can have a top-flight program, and it could be an essential part of the university. It has been. Look, Iowa isn't Harvard or Yale. It's not Bama or Texas or Notre Dame. It's none of those. But it is Iowa. It is well known. And from a merchandising standpoint, Hayden Fry absolutely put it back on the map. You can't go anywhere. And I mean, you cannot go anywhere without seeing Hawkeye logo somewhere. Want proof? Last week when I was off the show, Vito did the show for me. He said I was on assignment. I was actually on a cruise. Okay, we'll call it assignment. So I'm walking through a market in Roatan, Honduras, wearing my Hawkeye hat, my Hawkeye cap. Actually, correct that. Dan was wearing my rain jacket. No, I'm walking through one of the markets in Costa Maya. And this guy stops me and says, "Sir, I got your Hawkeyes." He had these boards that you hang on your wall. I'm not even sure. I mean, I'm not sure if they were anything more than decoration. They weren't cutting boards or trivets, because it had a little thing on the back to put it on your wall. A Hawkeye logo in Mexico. Now, I've been to Mexico previously. I was in Cancun one time and ran into a guy wearing a Hawkeye shirt. I mean, it's not unprecedented to run into people from Iowa elsewhere, but still, you know, the Hawkeye logo is well known, and Iowa is well known, and that's in part to Sandy Boyd's supportiveness of both Bump Elliott and Hayden Fry. Yeah, there are occasional down years for the Hawkeyes and the occasional blah seasons. But from the standpoint of anyone from 1961 to 1980, even this 2022 season would have been welcomed with open arms, hell, wide open arms. By 1978, Bob Cummings last year, people would have killed for 7-5 in a bowl game. Hell yes, they would have. Okay, moving on. Please don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering service. They perform services for your doctor's office, medical clinic, information services, hospital or government agencies, surveys. They get the job done, and they also can work with remote staff. So if you're looking for a job in that arena, give them a call. If you need their services or you're looking to work remotely, give them a call at 800-555-3738 or check them out on the web, alliancecommunications.com. Okay, another internet laughy. This one is from the Babylon Bee. I'm going to start laughing again. The headline is, customers unenthused by the latest American Girl doll, Steve. Such is the headline. It's the picture. It shows a picture of this little doll. It's not a rendering. It's a drawing. I mean, it's not a drawing. It's a picture of this a little doll in a dress, a little kid in a dress, complete with beard. I know. A little stuff makes me crack up, doesn't it? It's funny. Okay, let's get to our news and notes and whatnot. Okay, Brittany Griner. We know she was exchanged for arms dealer and terrorist supplier Victor Bout. Or Bout, I'm not sure how that's pronounced. It's Russian. It's not Latinic, Latin-based Spanish or French or something like that that I would understand. It's a Cyrillic-based, so I have no clue. Hawkeye Mike just sent me something. I missed a text about Stuart Margolin from a line from one of his. Pretty hilarious. Oh, by the way, like I said, Hawkeye Mike is on the phones, as is Sue from New Mexico. Welcome, Sue, and my big sister listening in. And there's two numbers I haven't recognized, but these don't look like these don't look familiar at all. There's some that I've recognized that have been popping in, but I don't. Anyway, according to Victor Bout, when he and Brittany Griner crossed paths during the exchange, he claims only that he, quote, wished her luck. Sure he did. But T. Bodie made an interesting comment in our text chat that some of us get involved in. He pointed out how Dallas Cowboys linebacker Micah Parsons tweeted out about leaving a Marine behind, but then was shamed and sort of gaslighted into recanting and being, quote, educated on the subject. Supposedly, the La Dopey Nostra pushed for both Griner and Marine Paul Whelan, but Russia said Whelan was off the table. Guess what? Micah Parsons is still right. That the U.S. government would buckle at the knees for an athlete who admitted guilt, versus a Marine that our same government itself said was sham arrested and sham convicted, that's almost inexcusable. Look, I'm happy for Brittany Griner and her wife and her friends and all that. I wouldn't wish a gulag on anyone. But to say we released a convicted arms dealer and terrorist supplier to get Brittany Griner is as bad as Dopey Joe's previous boss with his Bo Bergdahl swap. Now, guess what else? Victor Bout has now joined some Kremlin Liberal Democratic Party or some deal, is probably going to become a member of their, I don't know if they still call it the Politburo. I read the story just briefly. But yeah, that's what we released. Okay, we're going to move on to Sam Brinton. I talked about him a couple weeks ago. He's finally been fired after allegedly stealing luggage from two airports. The Department of Energy has fired him. He's a non-binary nuclear waste official. twice now, charged with stealing luggage from airports from females. DOE says they can no longer, they cannot comment further on personnel matters by law, whatever. This guy was our assistant secretary for spent fuel and waste disposition at the Office of Nuclear Energy. November, he stole luggage from a Minneapolis airport. He was charged in November. That occurred in September. He grabbed a woman's Vera Bradley suitcase, which, along with its contents, was valued at $2,325. He took it from baggage claim. Then, last Friday, he was arrest warrant was issued for nabbing property estimated between $1,200 and $5,000 from Harry Reid International Airport in Vegas. Of course, this raises questions about his first claim of in the first instance, saying it was completely a mix-up. He was caught on surveillance, but it turns out he didn't even get on in the original flight with any luggage. Now, here was the original story I'd slated for this week because, well, it came out before this one. Sam Britton, okay, I'll get past that. It was widely touted, blah, 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 for its, you know, he claimed innocence, insisting that he mistakenly took another passenger's bag. However, he never checked a bag before the flight. The video recording later showed a person who appeared to be Britton removing the suitcase's ID tag before running off with it. He later claimed that he realized he took the wrong bag when he got to his hotel. To avoid suspicion of theft, he stashed the materials of the suitcase in a dresser in the hotel room. He worked at the Trevor Project for 4 years, first as the head of advocacy and government affairs, and then as vice president of advocacy and government affairs. In August, it was revealed that the Trevor Project's anonymous online forum for LGBT youth was a breeding ground for perverse sexual content, aggressive gender reassignment referrals, and adults encouraging minors to hide gender transitions from their parents. Now, he's also bragged, this is where it gets weird, he's bragged about participating in kink relationships as a pup handler. A pup handler, pup, like puppy, person, typically a gay man, who enjoys interacting with other typically gay men as they pretend to be dogs. Good God. I mean, I just that, I read that, forget it, we're going on. Let's see, an Iranian soccer player has been sentenced to death. Remember what I said 2 years ago, or two weeks ago, that I actually rooted, or I didn't root, but I kind of wanted Iran to beat the U.S. in group play to reach the knockout rounds? This guy protested against the death of Mahsa Amini, and he was arrested in November. He's accused of waging war against God and will be hanged. He was arrested in November in relation to the killing of a police colonel. There's no word on whether any of that's true. Okay, so he last played for the Persian Gulf Pro League, but has not played professionally since his appearance in 2017. So I should have not just scanned that. I should have read through it really thoroughly because he was not on the team, not on the World Cup team. But like I said, I was rooting for Iran to beat us. Those guys got in trouble for not standing for their national anthem, not singing it. They do that knowing that they could go back to their country and face death. Our wuss athletes kneel for the pledge or the anthem or whatever. Then they make themselves victims. Compensation or big endorsement deals or whatever. Like standing or not standing for the anthem is endorsement worthy. Yeah, so Yeah, I'm just not in sympathy with our dealers. I got on Yahoo this morning to check my email. I know, Yahoo, but it's the first. Oh, I'll tell you later. Anyway, while I'm on Yahoo, I took this from the New York Times. It's still the same tired parent impersonation from all of big media and big tech, et cetera. The headline, ripped from an earlier headline, says, "It's time to wear a mask again, health experts say." What health, air quote, expert, still proclaimed as such, has any credibility at this point? Dr. Oz lost his last shred when he lost to Fetterman. Dr. Dre, of course, is not a peep out of him because he's not even claiming it. Dr. Doolittle, this guy just hangs around with animals. Dr. Hibbert from The Simpsons, he's a cartoon. Dr. Beeper from Caddyshack, well, any guy whose orders are stick a tube down her nose and I'll be there in 4 or 5 hours. Yeah, that isn't my idea of a health expert. Yet all of those have as much credibility as Drs. Fauci or Burks. Let me take you quickly through the article, which might be better headlined with this title, "Another Grasp at Complete Control." This is just ridiculous. These masks are back, and this time they're not just for COVID-19. So it says, a triple-demic of the coronavirus, influenza, and respiratory syncytial virus, known as RSV, sweeping through the United States has prompted several cities and counties, including New York City and Los Angeles County, to encourage people to wear a mask in indoor public spaces once again. The centers for, okay, case rates have supposedly spiked 56% for cases and 24% for hospitalization in recent weeks. CDC estimates there have already been 13 million illnesses and 7,300 deaths from the flu this season. So, in other words, it's flu season. It says those are expected to rise in the coming months. Well, yeah. Yeah. Annually, flu deaths have ranged from 12,000 to 52,000 people, with the peak in January and February. Duh. It says while RSV finally continues to appears to be on the decline, infection rates are still high across much of the country. It says the CDC officially advises wearing a mask on a county-by-county basis, depending on community COVID-19 levels, blah, blah, blah. They cite Rochelle Walensky, CDC director. She says, you don't need to wait for CDC's recommendation, certainly, to wear a mask. Another guy says, rates may vary, rates and cases may fluctuate, but really, the entire country is being affected. Really? Really? Are we really going to... And Hawkeye Mike texted to me, as he will be on later, as I said, as he pointed out, there's not a peer review study at all that says cloth masks, which 99% of us wear, are effective. Yeah. When are we going to learn? Dr. Helen Chu, an associate professor of allergy and infectious diseases at UW Medicine in Seattle. Yeah, talk about a place that hyper reacted. Look, as I've said before, I'm not saying COVID-19 doesn't exist. I'm not saying it's not real. I'm not saying that it doesn't kill certain people. Like influenza, by the way. That's a given. Is that what I'm saying, though? It's simply this. They are trying to get control again. Okay, moving on. Okay, RG3. One word. Stop. Okay, not one word. So Robert Griffin III, as he's born, RG3, he's the 2011 Heisman Trophy winner. He's a former 7-year NFL quarterback, and he's been on ESPN, in some way, shape, or form for several years. He has been a college football analyst as well as an NFL analyst. So last night on ESPN's Monday Night Countdown, he was talking about Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts. Now, Jalen Hurts was Alabama's starting quarterback for 2+ seasons. He then lost his starting job in the second half of the very last game of his second season. He then bailed Alabama out in the SEC championship game in his third season. Now, he barely played in the CFP championship game, which was a blowout loss to Clemson. As further insult, he was put in with 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Bama was already down 44-16. No thanks, in part, to Tua Tagovailoa being owned by Clemson's defense. Now, after that year, Hurts transferred to Oklahoma as a grad transfer, his third season at Bama, as he was allowed to do. Here's the interesting thing. He was called a traitor by Bama fans literally weeks after being called a hero after the SEC championship game for sticking with the program as a relegated backup who, as I said, did nothing to lose a starting job in the first place. He lit it up in Oklahoma. He led them to the college football playoff, although they lost in the semifinal to the juggernaut that was LSU, who I'm pretty sure after what's happened there the past couple of years, pretty sure that was a paid-for team. Anyway, Jalen Hurts proved he is the real deal. He was drafted by the Eagles in 2020. He became the starter in 2021. Note that the Eagles returned to the playoffs in 2021, the year he became the full-time starter. In 2022, he's only led the Eagles to a 12-1 record. Eagles have clinched the NFC East and home field advantage through the NFC playoffs. Oh, and by the way, 2022 is the first season, literally the first season since high school, Jalen Hurts has worked under the same offensive coordinator 2 consecutive seasons. In other words, Jalen Hurts has all but shattered the ongoing narrative that he's just a running quarterback or he's capable of much more than a few big plays here and there. He's proven. He's a winner. He's a winner. So on Monday Night Countdown, RG3 was talking about just that. Experts said Jalen Hurts, quote, as RG3 said now, could not get it done. He can't operate from the pocket. He's not the quarterback of the future. I think he's proved all those jigaboos wrong. Now on the surface, what do you think? Jigaboos? Well, Robert Griffin III's black. He has apologized. He apologized on Twitter. He said he's meant to say bugaboos. Guess what? There still might be further punishment coming from ESPN. What the hell? He apologized. He said he meant to use the word bugaboos. Seriously, can anyone tell me black Robert Griffin III was trying to be racially charged in the context of defending black Jalen Hurts? People, this isn't the same as Samuel L. Jackson or Ving Rhames using the word nigger in a Quentin Tarantino movie. It's nowhere close to that, and it's nowhere close to the use of the word nigger by gangbangers or street thugs, and it's certainly nowhere close to the use of the word nigger by some semi-illiterate hood-wearing mouth breather from Alabama or Florida or Minnesota or Illinois or Maine or Oregon. In other words, he clearly wasn't attacking Jalen Hurts. In fact, he was obviously complimenting and defending and advocating for Jalen Hurts. By the way, frankly, it wasn't just white experts, I use experts in air quotes, that said things like Jalen Hurts can't get it done, can't operate from the pocket, or isn't the QB of the future. Look, Robert Griffin III's a good dude. His pro career may not have met expectations, but he was always a competitor. He has shown through both his playing and his brother game, not to mention keen insight into it. So, yeah, lay the hell off RG3. Please. He simply doesn't deserve this. So the Twitterati types going after him need to be taught the nuances of context. They put it in context. RG3 was defending and advocating for Jalen Hurts. go on Twitter and just look up Robert Griffin III. You'll see it. You'll see the video because enough people have put it out there. It's really just sad. He did nothing wrong. I actually, you can go look. I actually told him he didn't owe an apology to anyone, and I've told other people that made great comments, thank you, or a good comment. He simply doesn't deserve this. He certainly doesn't owe an apology. It's nice that he gave one, but he doesn't owe anybody an apology. He didn't do anything wrong. Okay, so this next one's pretty much bullet point 1 through 10. Pick your own order and placement of bullet points. Just how far Washington, mainly Democrats, of course, will go in their lust for power, control, and prevent, have nothing to do with them or the jobs they are elected to do. Look, the GOP isn't immune. But even then, Democrats, you always try to make it about the GOP, especially when Dems get caught in their hypocrisy and their invasive tendencies and their outright abuse of position and power. Well, look, this story is also one I saw from Yahoo. It's noted that the story originally appeared on NBCNews.com or were the partner companies in MSDNC, if you strive for accuracy. Okay. So the House inclusion of, quote, salacious, unquote, commander's cheerleader photos in official memo draws blowback. So these attorneys wrote a letter saying Republican House members were sexualizing it, blah, 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 with these pictures. Well, what they didn't say, tell you is that they redacted certain parts and covered up certain parts. Basically, they were saying that some of this wasn't just about the Washington Redskins / Commanders, or as I call them, the Washington Redskin Commanders. The Democrats' memo, which basically said the NFL was at fault for allowing all this stuff. Could anyone tell me why? If the investigation was about damning the Washington Redskin Commanders, that they also implicated the NFL, but of course didn't actually investigate the NFL. Look, the NFL enjoys antitrust exemption at the pleasure of our government. That's not a blame thing. It's no single government entity that allows it, nor is it a bad thing. I mean, NFL teams also get consideration for nonprofit status or a host of other possible tax exemptions. I mean, it's a trade-off. And it shouldn't really be considered except as it applies to this particular story. If congressional Democrats are going to single out a team and then shadow cover with the NFL didn't do its job language, for heaven's sake, investigate the whole NFL. It includes the Rooneys, the Maras, and all the other left-leaning owners and partners. Yeah, exactly. They don't want to investigate the NFL. Redskins Commanders owner Dan Snyder is noted for his conservative viewpoints. While that should not earn him privilege from the GOP, it also should earn targeting, pardon the football euphemism, from Big Left. I really don't care about their cheerleaders or their feelings. Look, I won't go as far as calling them, quote, sluts who deserve it because they dress this way, unquote. But don't, let's not turn it into they're all law students or med students or PhD candidates who are just trying to survive by dressing scantily and performing on the sidelines at NFL games. I mean, good God, there's a hole there waiting for them. That includes the water jockeys, the towel jockeys, the men and women who toss a team's preferred choice of ball out to the official at the beginning of each possession. None of them are forced into any job. So please don't bitch and moan after 7 years on the job, which, by the way, didn't just involve dancing on the sideline. These cheerleaders, they show up at car dealer events, conventions, auto shows, whatever. So let's cut it out with a victim thing. Just stop with that. Of course, we got a trans cheerleader in the NFL now, so let's celebrate that. So while I'm on Yahoo, I know, I should probably bag that email account. Here's why I still keep it. It's my original web-based account. Most of my reward-type accounts are attached to that. it's the account I got when I went to Madagascar and couldn't use my regular normal Outlook account. Hey, Vito's in the chat room. Good evening, Vito. Anyway, I also pick up a story about Giada De Laurentiis. This is very timely, Vito coming in. He's going to get he figures into this story in a way. This is a story about Giada De Laurentiis and her favorite extra virgin olive oil, you know, EVOO, and how it's at a great price point on Amazon and how you can cook with it too. Okay, first of all, anyone who regularly cooks with extra virgin olive oil. No, I will not refer to it using that asinine acronym. Anyway, anyone who, quote, regularly extra virgin olive oil is a moron. As a dressing? Sure, yeah. As a drizzle on? Absolutely. In a marinade or paste or rub with a short cooking duration? Okay, sure. To dip my bread, you know, so I can show my friends how I'm both a regular guy and a straight-up sophisticate? Yeah, absolutely. But no, don't fall for it. I will explain. First, olive oil is used for certain reasons. There are types and grades of olive oil for some of those same reasons. Those types and grades serve a purpose, just as classification of wines serve a purpose. You wine drinkers will understand this. You wouldn't pour a bottle of Romani Conti into a sauce. You shouldn't use extra virgin olive oil that way either. One of the reasons for the differences is processing. Extra virgin olive oil is from the first cold pressing of the olives. In other words, no heat is used to extract the oil. See where I'm going with this, you science types? Yeah, it doesn't withstand heat, partly for that reason. It has a lower smoking point than regular olive oil, a significantly lower smoking point than peanut oil. So, yeah, if you want to impress your little clique by deep-frying a turkey, don't do it while also displaying your bottle of $20 extra virgin olive oil for the event. It also has certain flavor characteristics. Thus, your $20 extra virgin olive oil as part of a rub, paste, or a marinade for your smoked brisket is beyond pointless. I mean, seriously, what moron doesn't get that? Especially when you slather on a barbecue sauce loaded with heavy spices or heat. Okay, I get it. I get it. There are those people, those mouth-breathing creatures, that go on and on about how they eat habanero peppers by the jarful and only do ghost pepper sauce on their wings. Cool. Awesome. Wash it down with some Chardonnay, Biff. And don't forget the extra virgin olive oil, too. See, olive oil doesn't fit every flavor profile, no matter what Giada or Rachel Ray tell us. By the way, I might ask Giada on the show for next year's Kentucky Derby preview. If y'all don't get it, Mrs. Hank will. Okay, here goes. Last time I saw a mouth like that was in the home stretch at Saratoga. Or I'll use the line I use with Brother Tommy. From the neck down, she's an absolute thoroughbred. Unfortunately, from the neck up, she's an absolute thoroughbred. Okay, enough of that rant. But I better not have to actually bring Vito in here to explain the elemental uses of olive oil and spices. He has an actual life in addition to knowledge. You do not use, in other words, people, do not buy into deep frying with olive oil. Don't use it at high do not buy $20 olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, away. You don't do that. Idiotic. I don't know. Last Saturday was a biggie for college football. We had the annual Army-Navy game and later the awarding of the 2022 Heisman Trophy. In the Army-Navy game, for the first time ever, we saw a game that went to overtime. First time in that series. It ultimately went to a second overtime. Army won 20-17. In the aftermath, Navy fired their head coach, Ken Uematotolo, who was the winningest coach in Navy history. I get it. Few losing seasons in a row, 2-5 against both Army and Air Force the last seven seasons. But still, it's been pointed out that he isn't even playing with the same deck as the coaches at Army and Air Force. Both of those schools allow redshirting. Both of those schools allow class schedules that allow the players to be done at noon every day. Navy didn't even get extra time for the COVID year. there's some rule that midshipmen must graduate in 4 years. I'm not sure why it applies to them and not others, but whatever. But the point is, Ken Dewey Mutitolo was not playing on an even level. As for the Heisman, the winner was USC quarterback Caleb Williams, who had transferred from Oklahoma when Lincoln Riley left the Oklahoma head coaching job for the head coaching job at USC. Second, OSU quarterback C.J. Stroud. Third was TCU quarterback Max Duggan. And fourth was Georgia quarterback Stetson Bennett. Bama quarterback in 2021 winner Bryce Young finished sixth. Of the top 10 in the voting, only two players, Michigan running back Blake Corum and Texas running back Bijan Robinson, were non-quarterbacks. Tennessee's Hendon Hooker, whose season ended to that unfortunate ACL injury in their game against South Carolina. He was fifth. By the way, Caleb Williams also won the Maxwell Award. Max Duggan won the Davey O'Brien Award as the best QB. The Big Ten had three winners for four awards at the ESPN Awards show early in the week. Michigan center Olusegun Oluwatobi won the Remington Award as the best center, and the Outland as the best offensive lineman. Rutgers punter Adam Corsack won the Ray Guy Award. Meanwhile, Big Ten linebacker of the year and defensive player of the year, Jack Campbell, won the William V. Campbell as top scholar athlete and then took home the Butkus Award as the nation's best linebacker. Joe, by the way, he was also a consensus first-team All-American. Ironically, all four players in the Heisman ceremony shared the common position as quarterback. The winner, Caleb Williams, is the only one not in the CFP that came after USC's loss, their second loss, for a second time to Utah in their Pac-12 championship game. Meanwhile, in college basketball, former Arizona and current Xavier head coach Sean Miller will not face any sanctions from the Arizona FBI case. It's one of the first stories I ever reported on this show. And somehow, after a mere 3.5 years, they've managed to get it swept under the rug with Sean Miller facing no sanctions. Here's a couple really small tidbits from the article I saw at ESPN. Said the university received lesser sanctions in part because of its decision to self-impose a postseason ban for the 2021 tournament. Vacate all wins in which two athletes identified as student-athlete number one and student-athlete number three participated. They'd been charged with 5 level one violations. Miller was facing a level one charge that he, quote, did not demonstrate that he promoted an atmosphere for compliance and monitored his staff within the basketball program. Former assistants Book Richardson and Mark Phelps were hit with 10-year and 2-year show cause penalties violations. Panel also ruled that Arizona had, quote, failed to monitor, unquote, both its men's basketball and swimming and diving programs. Okay, how does this happen? Seriously, what will it take for certain numbers of these guys to actually be held accountable? Now, you heard the story briefly. Here's what else happened. He was caught on wiretaps. And if he really didn't know what staffers and assistants were doing, then that alone says that he did not demonstrate that he promoted an atmosphere for compliance or staff monitoring. Simple as that. So while I was on my cruise, on assignment, as Vito said last week, I kept my phone on airplane mode, which meant I could use ship Wi-Fi for their free app for free, but I had no other internet or phone access. But when I got to each of the three ports we visited, all part of the assignment, of course, I would find yet another Iowa player had entered the transfer portal. Now, to put all this in perspective, Iowa only actually has 7 players currently in the portal. Now, some are a surprise, some aren't. And, of course, the Hawkeyes have received commitments from 2 former Michigan players, quarterback Cade McNamara and tight end Eric Aul. Yes, the Hawkeyes still might need some help at wide receiver and offensive line, and they could probably shore up a little bit at defensive back and linebacker. Look, I really like Jay Higgins. He may not beat Jack Campbell right away, but I'm pretty confident that Jay Higgins will be very good next year. I'm just not a linebacker, Justin Jacobs. I don't worry about the defensive side of the ball as much as the offensive side, at least most of the time. Here's a story from Fox News that Hawkeye Kirk, Captain Kirk, remember I had him on the show a couple months ago? He shared on Twitter. This story proves that we as a planet are past losing our collective sanity. This is unreal. In Norway, a lesbian filmmaker faces up to 3 years in prison for hate speech under Norway's recently updated hate speech laws. The crime? Saying men can't be lesbians. Saying men can't be lesbians. Yeah, this is where we are in 2022 as we head straight at 2023. A lesbian filmmaker says that men can't be lesbians, but faces up to 3 years in prison for hate speech. What the actual hell? What the actual hell? Bit of an update on the Sam Bankman-Fried fiasco, which appeared on justthenews.com. Okay. So basically, this Democrat crook was denied $250,000 bail. His bid for release was denied. He cited his vegan diet and a diagnosis of ADD as justification. He's currently in Bahamian custody, faces extradition to the U.S. They unveiled an indictment against him. He faces charges from both the DOJ and the SEC in connection with the November collapse of his digital currency. There are missing investor assets, suspicious transfers of funds, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of folks could end up going to jail. Okay, before we all get partisan, let's remember criminals come from all sides, i.e. liberal, conservative, moderate, extremist, etc. Fact is, one common ingredient in crimes of this level, really, it's elite level access. This stuff doesn't happen in nowhere Nebraska or inconspicuous Illinois, and it doesn't happen among electricians or theater ushers or gas station attendants. But the bigger problem, it's the same level of elites who prosecute and mete out the punishment. Pure and simple, this guy would never face a true jury of his peers. The bigger problem might be, in fact, absent that, he may not face a fair trial in a jury because he would more likely face a jury that's biased against the concept of wealth, i.e. some serious class envy. So there's no middle ground. It's either the other elites that decide his fate, some who are probably – we're going to find out, by the way, that those – prosecuting them. We're going to find out a host of them are connected to this guy somehow. Just bank on it. Pardon the use of that word, given the situation. But we're going to find that out. We're going to hear that. More economic news, wonderful economic news. The Fed has raised interest rates another 50 basis points. Good Lord. Why can't they just say by 0.5%? Anyway, it brings rates to their highest since 2007. As expected, stocks reacted sharply at first and had a mild comeback before they all closed out. Dow Jones lost 143 points, 0.42%. S&P 500 lost just over 24 points, or 0.61%. NASDAQ lost almost 86 points, or 0.76%. Back to crappy news. Texas head basketball coach Chris Beard has been suspended by the school after an arrest early Monday on domestic violence charges. Here's a bit of an update that goes into it. I'm not going to read the whole thing, obviously, but there's some things about it. He and his fiance were having relationship issues, and during a heated conversation, he snapped and became super violent. He refused to communicate with her because he was mad at her. When he came home, he went to the guest room in the house. She went in to check on him. He was reportedly laying on the bed twirling a pair of reading glasses when she grabbed them and broke them. He then allegedly went to the main bedroom where he slapped the glasses she was wearing off her face. When the two were supposedly laying in bed together, she attempted to retrieve her glasses, and she claims that was when she was thrown off the bed. She was attempting to gather her things, but reportedly couldn't see because she didn't have her glasses. She then claims he stood behind her and put his arm around her neck. I get all this, except the part where they were laying in bed together. What were they doing laying in bed together during all that? I thought he was in a separate bedroom. And he went back into the bedroom and they were laying in bed together? Weird. Carrie Lake isn't going away. Now a judge overseeing her lawsuit has ordered Lake, as well as Arizona's Secretary of State / Governor-elect Katie Hobbs, Maricopa County Board of Supervisors officials, along with others, to appear at a court hearing that was, I think, was originally slated for yesterday. Whether or not this ends up going anywhere is almost immaterial. As I and others have said on this show, Carrie Lake is not going to be in the Arizona governor's mansion anytime soon. But, which was well-placed, well-directed, and well-worded, is going to shed further light on some of the processes that they use. So we've seen some of the Twitter file dumps from them. I gleaned several things. First, our federal government conspired with big tech to suppress free speech. There were regular BOLO meetings, be on the lookout, and they even specified the type of COVID-19 info that should be excluded from their platforms. In other words, they violated the First Amendment rights for all of us. Second, they conspired to get President Donald Trump, mind you, banned from various platforms. Twitter even announced before the election that they would hand over the official White House Twitter account to Joe Biden if he won. Meanwhile, Donald J. Trump was banned from being able to exercise his free speech rights, both as a citizen and a presidential candidate. A third, they suppressed stories, and anyone who, pushed on them, posited them, on the Hunter Biden laptop from hell. Note, they didn't actually refute anything from the story. They simply repudiated under the guise of no concrete proof, and despite other unproven stories and narratives being thrown around across all those sites. And we now know that the FBI worked specifically against the re-election of President Trump. And they have furthered their actions, I believe, with the whole January 6th Inquisition, which is a whole other can of crap. Folks, we have been manipulated, lied to, stolen from, and now face a serious assault on our very thoughts. Literally, anything has been subject to suppression, censorship, and worse, persecution or prosecution, simply for what we say or think. Unless and until we collectively stand up and, if necessary, we fight for these basic rights, we shall continue to have only ourselves to blame. As I referenced above, we already face the possibility of a return to mask mandates. Look, if it happens in your state, you can't just complain. You got to take action. You got to refuse. You got to go public. You go viral, whatever. But you go after businesses who insist. Go to the offices of your elected officials. Thankfully, being in Florida, that won't happen. For me, probably. But should it be attempted by businesses? Yes, I will scream. Look, it was one thing for a business to require masks while there was still uncertainty at best and fear at worst. Now, there is zero evidence masks work effectively to stop the spread of disease across a population, specifically cloth masks, which is what 99% of us wore. There is 100% proof that closing down an economy or sectors of it leads to economic distress. So if they won't allow you in without a mask, shop elsewhere, publicize it, tell your friends and family. More importantly, shout loudly where there is inconsistency and hypocrisy. As an example, if XYZ company requires mask mandates in one state but not in another, scream it from the damn rooftops. That is the kind of hypocrisy and manipulation we need to broadcast and stand up to. End rant. One last internet laughing before I go to break and then come back. And Mike is going to join me at that point. Mike is going to join me for several things. We're going to talk about lots of stuff. And that'll be in about 3 minutes. But anyway, last internet laughing before break. This is from the Babylon Bee. Canadian healthcare system issues punch card where 10th visit gets you free suicide. I know I'm not supposed to laugh at that, but that is precisely where that healthcare system is going. Okay, going to break for about 3 minutes. Enjoy this little Christmas ditty. Brother Tommy loves it. He hasn't been on here to listen to it, but I know he loves it. Be back in a couple. Be back in three. Sal Soul Orchestra, their little Christmas tune, Merry Christmas All. Love that song. So we are back. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found every day at com. 7 days a week we're here. I've already told you that, though. Hey, anytime you want to reach out, I talked about interacting during the show, including our number, 319-527-6706. You can also reach out to any of us if you get our Twitter handles or email. My email, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Email me anytime. I'm on Facebook, although I don't go there as much to really just to announce what the shows are. I interact more on Twitter, at hpolysports. I won't give out Vito's Twitter handle unless he says I can, but Vito is on Twitter. you'd be able to find him if you looked hard enough. If you looked for my stuff, you'd find some of Vito's stuff. So, because I follow Vito. So anyway, those are good ways to interact as well. So one quick laughy before I bring Mike on. Add Chris Christie to the list of those blaming Trump for Republican losses to Democrats in the midterms. By the way, this is the same Chris Christie who lauded and praised Obama for Hurricane Sandy response in the weeks before the 2012 election. Yeah, oh, the irony. Okay, I'm going to bring him in. Mike, you there?
I'm here, Hank. How's it going?
Good. Finally back from the cruise, finally relaxed, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, listen, I wanted to say something real quick about I had intended to call in when Vito was hosting last week, but I was kind of unavoidably had a conflict come up that day, so I was not able to do that. But
as Bill Murray said in the Stripes, I was unavoidably detained. Or
that's right. Yeah. Well, I won't bore people with the details, but yeah. But yeah, otherwise, but I, you know, always enjoy, listening to Vito. So, I otherwise would have called in.
Yeah. Hey, first, before we start, it should be noted, I was the only one who correctly picked all four CFP teams 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah. I was trying to remember, I guess the kicker here was, I thought I did say, predict that I thought Ohio State would get in.
Yeah, but you predicted
that
USC.
Either, okay.
Yeah, you predicted USC in favor of in lieu of TCU, but USC blew it the night before, the Friday night of that weekend, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
At that point, TCU was able to lose and not have an effect of. So, hey, let's start
good
with
to see the Big Ten get to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For once, hey, so guys, what are your thoughts on the whole Brittany Griner swap thing?
Well, you know,
interested
my,
to hear your thoughts.
Basic. Yeah, it's a, more of a basic level. I don't really want to get into this. You know, a lot of people that get into this, well, you know, she was traded because of the her LGBTQ identification, and you know, so there's this woke political correctness to it. That may be the case. I don't know. But to me, it's just a simple matter of this was a bad trade for America because – this guy, in Trump's words, was a really bad hombre. That's Victor Bout.
Yeah.
And we should have at least been able to get, in addition to Griner, I think, that Whalen guy, Paul Whalen.
Yeah.
And,
absolutely.
And I to just get Griner, who was basically taken on a pretty Trump – I mean, look, she did it. But it was basically she had a vape thing with cannabis, which in most states in the United States is legal. Now, she was boneheaded to do it. But, you know, that's what we traded for this guy.
Yeah,
this guy
exactly.
This guy was really bad news, and he's probably going to start operating again before long. So I just think it was just a really, really poor, dumb trade. We should have been able to get more for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so next one I want to ask you about. This whole luggage-stealing pup handler guy. I got to ask you this because I know you didn't work technically in government maybe, but you clerked for federal judges. How did this guy get past a background check?
Well, you know, there's probably a whole host of people, I have to say, that are sort of like this guy. You know, I mean, the answer is obvious, isn't it? It's because of in a administration where the vice president's chief attributes are she's a black woman that you would have to ask that. She has no other, traits to
pup handler. What the heck? I mean, when I hear pup handler, that he literally like handles gay men who act like dogs. I mean, I'm not even all that pissed off about the luggage stealing thing at this point. I mean, I'm kind of thinking, well, when I hear pup handler, I'm thinking, well, luggage theft ain't so bad.
Well, you know, I will say this, though. I think somebody, I think it might have been Indy Hawk, had messaged earlier about how, you know, what's going to happen. This guy's,
but he is
indicted. I mean, this guy is going to see jail time, it looks like.
Yeah, but here's what's funny, and I'm going to read the text in a second so everybody can hear. First of all, I want to ask you, okay, as an SNL skit, but preferably an SCTV skit, I got to believe the fight over who gets to play this guy goes knockdown drag. I'm not even sure. I mean, I know John Candy would have fit well, not as necessarily as the pup handler, although I'm not discounting him for that. But, I mean, he would have showed.
Martin Short would have fit in here somewhere, I think.
Yeah. But Candy, I mean, just the classics. You know, Joe Flaherty and Eugene Levy. I mean, there's just so many ways to go. But now let's think of a sketch series. In other words, ones where they were ongoing sketches. Name an SNL sketch and an SCTV sketch. Either one. Name from each one that you would have loved to see this parodied. Which SNL sketch do you think would sketch series would parody this best? Which ongoing SNL sketch?
I've been following SNL for so many years. You could go back to the, you know.
Oh,
I'd
say you'd have to go back to the
like, class. I think Will Ferrell could have done this guy pretty good. Imagine him with a shaved head. And, you know, I think that could have been very good. You know,
I would have loved
Phil Hartman.
But how about this on SCTV, a guest either on the Sammy Maudlin show, or
he gets to fit in with the Bittman. Yeah.
Or the other one,
Mel's rock pile.
or no, I was thinking Brock Linehan. Would that be, I mean, Brock or the other two? Who are those two guys? Troy Sorin and Joel Weiss. Or Joel, these knockout pills you give me are killing me. That all of them would have been good, but
it's been so long since SCTV. I mean, I know you can find it on probably on Netflix and Amazon or something, but I've started delving into the there's a Facebook page for SCTV. And the clips, and I've just been, you know, reacquainting myself with Six Gun Justice and things like that. And it's absolutely hilarious. The Johnny LaRue show.
Six Gun Justice was Gun Justice.
Don Mills,
came in
the singing cowboy. Yeah.
But Six Gun Justice, here's how funny that was. That came after Candy and Thomas had left. In other words, Dave Thomas
right.
was gone.
They brought
John Candy
Marsden in, yeah.
But, I mean, still, just like that. That in other words, the genius level there was just, you know, he would have been a good joke on the happy hour, actually. But anyway, I'm gonna read Indy Hawk's message to us today, because I think it'll take a second for it to sink in with everybody because of how he worded it. He says, if it were a white male, they'd be in jail. Now think about that. The sheer beauty
of
you.
Well, he is going to be in jail, though.
Yeah, no. But the sheer
he, she,
beauty.
Whatever they, them.
No. I'm saying the sheer beauty of using the words it and they in the same sentence to describe this whole thing is absolute gold. I think I'm pretty sure that's what he's going with. In other words, if it were a white male, they would be in jail. That is so funny.
Well, you know, they talk about how they have these gender pronouns now. It's he, him, she, her, and they, them. Well, I think we need to add it, and I don't know what would go with it, but, you know. And then that might be, of course, that would not be considered very flattering to these people. Like, they,
well,
apparently they, them is. But I think it's probably more more accurate description. It thing, I don't know.
I don't even know where to go, but it's just like, what in the hell? Now,
it's the madness of this. It's just unbelievable.
I know.
Yeah.
It is. It's just, how in the hell did we get to this place? I mean, it's just like, what? I mean, remember,
Republicans really ought to make a big deal about this. You can really put Democratic politicians into a real bind. We see this more and more. I think it's going to keep getting worse. When you ask them to define woman and they just get this look, Bambi in the headlights look, because it is so fraught from their perspective and their base with danger if they say the wrong thing. And yet it is so foreign to what most people know is the case and what is biologically the case. And I think Republicans ought to just keep, I mean, it's just a great way to trip these people up and show them for the frauds and ridiculous idiots they are.
Yeah. By the way, Vito said in the chat room to tell you no hard feelings about last week. He knows it always. That stuff can happen. So here's another question. Chris Christie, you know, I gave that statement, but he made a somewhat salient point on that interview. He said good candidates are what wins, not Trump endorsements. And he said that Herschel Walker was not a good candidate. I'm paraphrasing that, by the way, a little bit, but it's still a good point. I mean,
okay.
You mentioned Dr. Oz several weeks ago. You know,
go ahead.
Oz really had almost no platform. I mean, what did Oz run on? You know, now Christie is citing Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker at least had a platform, but I sort of agree from the standpoint. Look, despite both Fetterman and Raphael Warnock being poor excuses for candidates, I mean, Herschel Walker still came with a good amount of baggage. You know what I mean?
I think the problem that he had really, and Warnock, to his credit in terms of just being sort of from a Machiavellian point of view, really hit home on it, was that he really played up the character thing with, and the hypocrisy angle with Herschel and the women that he apparently was driving to get abortions, going with him to get, in years past. And I think that it could have been overcome, but Herschel didn't really seem to have a good comeback. I mean, easiest comeback would have been, look, I was a different person years ago. I'm a lot different person now. And my faith kind of informs my beliefs now.
Oh, absolutely. And having gone,
he
could have simply said, having gone through that, I know, you know, yeah, exactly. I mean,
I think that these things were, and I think what lost it for him was, the enthusiasm angle, and getting the base out, and all it takes is a small percentage of the, and I think probably the more evangelical element of the Republican base, it had problems with Herschel, and I think it was a shame, but I think that's what happened.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the New York Times, including John Fetterman, on their most stylish list?
I don't even know if you knew that. I just saw today. Hoodie and then cargo shorts. I mean, every college student in the country is probably didn't realize how stylish they were.
I know.
But, then also it came out that the guy was working as an extra in some Western, and they had a picture of him looking like some guy from right out of Amish country. did you see this with Christian Bale and?
I didn't see the picture, but I saw the headline.
And this was at the time when he couldn't debate and he was still recovering from his stroke, but he had a chance. He did have time to go and be an extra in this film.
I'm still wondering what's going to happen. I mean, we've had this is a first that we've had people die before taking office and all that stuff, but I got to believe he's not going to be able to fit. I don't know. We'll see. Let's get to college football and the Hawks. Cade McNamara's in, and now today officially so is Eric All. What's your surprise level on the Hawks that have entered the portal? I mean, like, who are your biggest shocks? Who are, don't surprise?
A couple of the biggest shocks were Harry Roberts, which I don't quite understand that. I think he's only got 1 year of eligibility left, doesn't he?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I can't remember where he's going. Justin Jacobs, I was surprised too, because I thought, the guy, of course, he didn't play much this year because of injury, but he had, had pretty good success here. And I just don't know what the incentive was. He did go to Oregon, which I kind of was like a go figures when I saw that.
Well, here's why. This is where
the NIL stuff, I guess, is just what's doing it.
But the thing that everybody is saying, tampering, and some of the people even some former players have said this smacks of tampering. And somebody said, "Oh, everything's tampering," and he said, "No, not everything's tampering." But this case, I really believe that. Somebody pointed out Justin Jacobs. Most people thought he would go to Georgia because that's where his girlfriend goes, supposedly. But he didn't. He's going to Oregon. Which,
Let me ask you this, Hank, on the Keegan Johnson thing. Goes to Kansas State. Is NIL gig there really more attractive than at Iowa? I kind of find that hard to believe.
I think there was the interview with Kelton Copeland who said, half of one of his days last year before the Big Ten Championship was dealing with a parent or parents that were talking about their son's playing time and their son, the number of targets their son was getting. I think that implies to me that it was probably Keegan Johnson. It could have been Charlie Jones, maybe. I don't know. I had a hard time.
Yeah.
But you know, Keegan Johnson wasn't available for the bowl game. That came out of nowhere. I mean, it literally got brought up like that day, Keegan Johnson can't play the bowl game. And then just his injury this year, I mean, I just don't – something doesn't make sense out of it. You know what I mean? Especially everybody.
You mean you're implying like he might have been slow walking his recovery and just not wanting to play?
Yeah. So he would lose the year.
Yeah. No, I suspect the same thing.
You know,
it didn't sound like it was that bad of an injury, and he's out basically the whole year.
Yeah. Now, he ends up at K-State, which is a surprise because his father went to Nebraska. Joseph would have been his wide receivers coach, and Big Joseph has been let go, obviously, after that whole problem he had. So. You know, Terry Roberts is a bit of a shock to me. Definitely, I don't quite get that one. Who else? Dallas Cradius, but he's never really cracked
One thing to keep in perspective here is I think you alluded to it a little bit about Iowa having, I think, seven people. There was a list that came out the other day that basically shows Iowa's down in the middle of the pack in terms of how many people they've got. This has hit everybody, and a lot of higher pro. Like I think Alabama is really bad.
And these people
that were loaded up on scrubs don't want to sit on the sidelines anymore.
Grayson McCall can start anywhere
else, right?
Yeah,
and,
Grayson
and
McCall.
So I don't think
Iowa
really come out of it that bad. Right, and I think there's more to come for Iowa in terms of people coming in. So I think, you know, when the dust settles here, it may be kind of a wash for Iowa. And I'm talking about both on the offensive and defensive side. I think we've got a pretty good chance of getting a nice a good get on the receiver side or two.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I wouldn't be surprised to see a linebacker come in too.
Right. So how about what are your thoughts on the Music City Bowl in terms of this? We have no Spencer Petras. Portal entries won't play. Whether or not they have new schools. But here's my twofold question. Number one, do you think we can win with Joey Lavis?
I think if the Kentucky quarterback was still there, we would have a really difficult time. But now they've got the same problem we do. He's going pro and he's not playing. And so they're going to have a greenhorn at quarterback. So it could be kind of interesting, and I'm assuming that it'll be Labus that starts, and it'll be a good chance. The thing about it, it's going to be a good chance to see what this guy can do. And if he has a good game, there's going to be a lot of people questioning why he didn't get a chance to play during the year.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
We'll
would you accept? Would you accept it if Padilla, or frankly, any of the portal entries who don't have new schools, would you accept it if they said they wanted to play in the bowl game?
My view, and I don't know what Kirk – I have no idea what Kirk's attitude, but if I was head coach, I'd say you're done. The minute you announce you're going to the portal, you're done here.
Yeah.
And I just think that's the way you got to be. If you don't want to play at Iowa, we're not going to give you some sort of little, interim period here where you can still do it. You're done. The minute you evince a desire not to play for Iowa, you're done. You're off the team.
Yeah.
And I think that you have to do that for team unity, you know.
Well,
really.
Don't forget, though, Davion Nixon was actually in the portal at one point.
If any of these guys decide they want to walk it back, that's different.
Right.
But
yeah.
If their intention is, at the time of the game, is that they're transferring, then they don't play.
Right.
That's my view.
I agree. Yeah, I agree on that. So,
you know that people can walk it back. Yeah.
Here's what I also don't get. If you're on the team, I see guys, on Twitter, really very vocal in their support of these guys. Go be great and all that stuff. Feel that way, or do you categorically treat it as
no.
They failed, or do you kind of go case by case? How do you feel?
With Padilla, I kind of understand. I mean, I think he saw the – I think he knew he had wind that McNamara's coming in, and he could see the writing on the wall. So it was time to make a move. I think if Matt, you know, I think the McNamara thing was kind of in the works for a little while. And I think certainly before it was announced, I can't remember if Padilla said he was going into the portal before McNamara came here. It was pretty close.
He actually did say it. He said he was going to the portal, but he couldn't announce it. But what was surprising was Cade McNamara could announce it because he entered it as a grad transfer. So it was a different, you know, that's why he was able to commit earlier.
So I think the bottom line was that I think Padilla knew what was going to happen here that with McNamara, and that's probably why, more than anything, why he's leaving.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I kind of think that's the case.
I just don't get, I mean, Arlen Bruce, he had plenty of targets, and I don't understand him. I don't understand Justin Jacobs. Terry Roberts, I don't understand either. But on the other hand, maybe he's thinking, well, you know, Jabari Harris comes back and I'm out of a job again, probably. Or what? I don't know. It's hard to say what they're thinking.
I do think you got a point there, because I think with Robert, and I'm a big Terry Roberts fan. I was a big Terry Roberts fan. But yeah. I think with him out so much of the year, we saw some of these other guys come in and get some time. And
true.
So he was not guaranteed to be the starter, I think, next year. I mean, he may have been, but who knows. But I think, you know, now we're in a situation where linebacker was our strength. But I do like Jay Higgins, and I can't remember, was it Sebastian Castro that's also played at linebacker?
He's been playing cash. I don't know who our second
He could probably – yeah, I'm trying to think who – you know, now with Jacobs out, and I think I'm assuming Seth Benson's gone as well.
Somebody said Seth Benson technically still has more time. I don't know that for a fact, so I can't speak to that. But somebody said he actually has
Benson back. That would be a good deal. Yeah.
I was very impressed.
I'm not counting on that.
Yeah. Jay Higgins was very good at the run defense. I don't know how often he's out at pass defense. I've seen him sometimes. Other times I haven't. So, you know, I mean, it's just hard to say.
And the word is that Lucas Van Ness is coming back. There was some speculation he might go pro, but he's pretty much said, I have no plans to do that. I'm coming back.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen that several places. So I just don't, you know, I don't put any credence for people who say he's, you know. I mean, let's put it this way. Nobody's talking about him entering the portal. You know what I mean? It's all.
And there was a lot of Caden Proctor speculation, but my understanding is that he's still set to come to Iowa. So
yeah, I've seen nothing that would indicate otherwise either. So, I was surprised with Bruce a little bit, but once Keegan Johnson announced that, I was less surprised. Here's the thing, though: you got to remember with those guys. Yes, Keegan Johnson was in Iowa for his last year of high school, but that was strictly because his in Nebraska his school didn't play football. You know, Nebraska didn't have interscholastic sports in 2020. So he didn't, you know, he just didn't get to play or whatever. So I sort of get that, you know, that he's not really an Iowa guy. Bruce also is from Kansas and played in Iowa for the same reason his senior year. So I sort of understand that they're not, you know, and that's why I guess I understand it with Jacobs. I mean, most of the guys that are entering the portal are not guys that grew up in Iowa. In other words, they're not. It's not a Chad Greenway or a Robert Gallery or anybody of that. You know, they're not homegrown guys. You know what I mean? So that's partly why it doesn't. The ones that, you know, you're thinking, well, why would Jacobs? But at the same time, he didn't grow up a Hawkeye fan. You know, he didn't grow up in Iowa. You know, just going gaga over it. He may love his teammates and stuff, but he probably just thought maybe I could get a better deal elsewhere, and I'll give it a shot. I don't know. I mean,
and by the way, with Arlen Bruce, I don't think it's been announced yet where he's going, has it? But the word I'm getting is he might be going to Iowa State, which to me would be really puzzling. If that was the case, that would be very surprising. But maybe he thinks that, you know, and also with Cade McNamara coming in, I was just wondering what, obviously Keegan Johnson's not going to do, but I just wondered if Bruce might reconsider.
Well, there's the other factor.
I think the offense is kind of on the right track. And then Eric, all you know, look, we're losing Laporta. Lachey's a good guy, but you really need two good tight ends. So that's a good getting Eric, you know, all. And with McNamara coming in, and, you know, I haven't heard anything more. There had been some scuttlebutt about Deontay Vines, but as far as I know, he's still with Iowa, and he's not going, so that's good. I think he's going to be a good receiver.
Absolutely. So there are 10 bowl games this next week. Can you name one of them, or can you name at least three of the 20 teams playing?
I can't really. I haven't, you know, to me, every year more and more, it's these bowls that are outside the playoffs or outside the, what is it, the New Year's Six, become more and more irrelevant. And that includes even bowls like the Capital One Bowl. That's technically, and Outback are technically January 1, but I don't think they're considered the New Year's Six. But I think what's going on here is, you know, with the announcement now, we got the playoffs going to 12 teams starting in 24. Looks like now they're pushing pretty hard for Oklahoma and Texas to be in the SEC in 24 to coincide with Southern Cal and UCLA coming into the Big Ten.
Right.
When you get to 12-team playoff, almost every bowl that's outside of that playoff position is just – I mean, they become irrelevant. And I think the bowls are dinosaurs that are going to go away. I think with the 12-team, we're pretty much into a situation now like FCS division, used to be Division II, and in the NFL where we just have a playoff system now and bowls are meaningless.
Yeah, I could see a scenario where, because with 12 teams, I could see a scenario where some of these bowls are used as, you know, first round games. You know what I mean? I could see that scenario. Or I could see on campus. But there's also saying that there's going to be on campus games. So that's, that either. But I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess coaches really like the idea of getting more practice for teams with bowl games. You know, it's simple as that. Are bowls going to be able to afford to do it? I mean, here are the 10 bowls we got the next week. The Hometown Lenders Bahamas Bowl this Friday, 11:30 a.m., Miami of Ohio versus Alabama Birmingham. It's on ESPN. First of all, viewership ain't going to be much. Now, maybe there'll be fans there, but I can't imagine there are going to be many.
Well, I was going to say, just watch if you go to, just for the purpose of doing this, go to any of these bowl games that are on TV just for a few minutes, even if you don't care about the game itself, and look and see what kind of crowd they have in the stands, because I think they're quarter full, maybe half full if they're lucky.
Yeah.
But we've seen this in the last couple of years. They can't fill these stadiums, and that's got to be a problem, you know, for these bowls. I would have to get that.
That's one reason why I think Northwestern is building a smaller stadium, because they realize people are staying home more, you know? I mean, it's just, I think that's it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You said that bowl you just mentioned with Miami of Ohio, and I can't remember.
Alabama.
There are
UAB
conferences like the MAC and the SWAC and some of these others that just, you know, Sun Belt, they're just never going to, even in a 12-team playoff, they're just hardly, you know, if ever, going to have even one team get in that. So there might be an argument for some of these bowls to exist for these types of conferences that are still in FBS, Division One. But I think by and large, things like the Outback Bowl, Capital One Bowl, Gator Bowl, all these things they're the ones that are going to really have a tough time when you go to a 12-team playoff.
Yeah. Well, the other bowl on Friday is in Orlando, but it's not in the Citrus Bowl. It's at Exploria Stadium, which is UCF's stadium. UTSA, who's ranked, by the way, 25th, and number 24, Troy, the Duluth Trading Cure Bowl. I mean, that's actually not a bad matchup. But December 16th at 3 p.m., I mean, really? I mean, and on another school's campus. I mean, I just, you know, again, I don't know what some of these bowls are thinking. Saturday, there's actually a good game, the Fenway Bowl, though. I mean, it's the bowls probably suck. But Cincinnati versus Louisville in the Fenway Bowl. I mean, that's not too bad team.
Is this like in Boston?
Yeah.
I mean, the Fenway Bowl?
It's at Fenway. Yeah, they're playing at Fenway Park. And then Vegas.
Have they
ever
played a football game at Fenway Park?
I'm sure they have, but then you got Florida and Oregon State. Again, Oregon State's number 14, 9-3 against 6-6 Florida in the Las Vegas Bowl. I mean, you know, I can't imagine And then you got Washington State, Fresno State in the Jimmy Kimmel L.A. Bowl presented by Stifel, which is a trading company. I mean, you know, Rice versus Southern Miss. Now, Rice went 5-7. They weren't enough 6-6 teams, so they were the highest academic progress team for at 5-7 in the Lending Tree Bowl in Mobile.
Wow, there's just something about a team with a losing record. It seems like if you have any pride, you would refuse to go. I know that's. I mean, I'm ignoring the practicalities of the extra practices,
sure,
and getting a shot at another game. But wow, you know, I mean, I would hope that Iowa would never consider going a 5-7 team going to a bowl game. I would hope that. To me, it's an embarrassment.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. It's like those out, not the NCAA or the NIT, but like the CBI and the CIT and those other basketball tournaments. And just, you know, that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
Also on Saturday, the New Mexico Bowl, SMU and BYU, and then later North Texas and Boise State in the Frisco Bowl. I mean,
I just don't know if these things are going to be on my radar screen to watch.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we're getting to that time of the year, correct me if I'm wrong, where we're going to start seeing some NFL games on Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. And then Monday,
I'd be more interested in that. Have more
Marshall
right
and
now,
UConn, Marshall and UConn on Monday in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. Tuesday, Eastern Michigan, San Jose State in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. I've always laughed at that bowl, even if it's had good teams. And Liberty and Toledo in the roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl.
What happened? Let me ask, what happened to the Meineke Car Care Bowl?
We haven't got there yet. This is just
into the ash heap of history?
probably a different day. And then we have the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl next Wednesday. So that's Western Kentucky and South Alabama.
Wow.
It just doesn't. It's just really.
And I assume that all of these games are televised by somebody.
Yeah. Let me see. Friday's games are both ESPN. Saturday is three ESPN and one ABC or two on ABC. So no, there's seven games Saturday. Four on ESPN. Or five on ESPN, two on ABC.
I always had this view since I was a little kid that any bowl game that occurred prior to Christmas was not a bowl game worth paying any attention to.
Yeah.
Starting Christmas Day, you could have a legitimate bowl game. But before that, I don't know. It just, you know, doesn't seem right. But
pretty much all these are on ESPN or ABC thus far. Now, there was one I saw, and it wasn't in this next week, but there's one that's being carried. Oh, yeah, it's streaming on Barstool Sports streaming app. In other words, it's strictly, you know, you're not getting it on anything. You have to have Barstool Sports, it sounds like. Now, you can probably pay if you're a fan of the team. We don't even get Fox into the mix until Wednesday the 28th, two weeks from now. That's the Holiday Bowl.
By the way, it would be more interesting to me to watch something like the FCS championship game, which I think, by the way, South Dakota State is one of the teams that's in that. You know, everybody kind of ridiculed Iowa for that 7-3 victory. It's a repeat of what happened in 2003 with Miami of Ohio when they had Ben Roethlisberger. They lost to Iowa in the first game, and they never lost the game the rest of the year. That's exactly what's going on with South Dakota State. And so they were pretty, they turned out to be a pretty damn good team.
Yeah, absolutely. Our bowl is New Year's Eve Day, noon against Kentucky. That's an ABC game. I mean, it's just pretty much all these. There's a couple exceptions where something's on Fox or something's on, you know, Barstool. CBS still has the Sun Bowl. But, I mean, other than that, you know, it's pretty much dominated by ESPN and ABC. I mean, it's just kind of – I just can't – I'm getting past the point where I used to think, you're right, Christmas, anytime after Christmas. But then, you know, another thing that kind of hurt for a while, I think, in my opinion, is when you had games like January 2nd, January 3rd, January 6th, the Japan Bowl,
it
Bowl one year.
It kind of diminished the significance of January 1st. You know.
Yeah. Because, I mean, for a while.
Let me ask you, though. Aren't the first two playoff games on the 31st of December?
I believe they are at night, yeah. Okay, so.
Because I think they were last year, so I'm assuming they are this year.
Yeah, okay, so our game with Kentucky and Alabama, Kansas State for the Sugar Bowl are both at noon, one on ESPN, one on ABC. And then at 4 p.m. on ESPN, TCU, Michigan, and then 8 p.m. Ohio State, Georgia. So
I mean, it's just going to be hard to compete with those two playoff games that actually really
but they're
matter.
Not the same.
Obviously, we'll be watching the Hawks, obviously, but you know, yeah. It's not good
but
to play that dang day, maybe.
You know, but 7-5 Iowa versus 7-5 Kentucky with Iowa missing two quarterbacks, Kentucky missing their starter plus their running back.
Levis, yeah, he's not playing. Yeah,
but they're also losing. Chris Rodriguez. I mean, so that just doesn't, you know, it just to me, it seems, wow, you know, they're really just tossing it in almost, I mean, for the rest of them. So
it seems to me, don't you think, feel like the Bulls are just, a lot of these, they're just becoming more and more irrelevant. And we aren't even to the 12-team playoff yet, but I mean, I just, when you get to a 12-team playoff, it's, to me, it's like, if you can't make the top 12, maybe it's, you know, just like when the pros, just like in the FCS, you know, your season's done. You can't make it. Iowa would have been 5 or 6 times in the last 20 years they would have been playoffs if we'd had a 12-team playoff.
Yeah, oh, exactly. But now, I mean, I think you know, it's going to be, it's going to be the rounds. So there's going to be 4 games and then another, they're going to narrow it to 8 or whatever. So, or no, yeah, that's how they do it. How many teams get byes in that? The first 4 get byes?
Yeah, I think the way they work is the top 4 get byes, and then the seeds 5 through 12, like 5
so
plus 12.
So the first week you're going to have
11,
4 games. The first week you're going to have 4 games.
Yeah.
The next week you're going to have 4 games. So that's
exactly.
8, right? You know. So there's a way. I like the idea of on-campus games, but maybe a way to do that is to rotate it with somehow with some of the lesser bowls, because some of those bowls, you know, for communities, they've put out money for it, you know. I mean, may not mean anything to someone in Tampa or Dallas or whatever, but for people, you know, in Memphis or...
Like Orlando, right, with the Citrus Bowl or something. That's
I mean, Orlando has...
A pretty big thing.
Orlando has... Yeah, Orlando has several bowls. They've also got the... they got Oklahoma and Florida State in the Cheez-It Bowl. Jesus. But, yeah, Orlando actually
has... I'm not sure if it has quite the imprint the Citrus Bowl has, but I could be wrong.
No, but guess what? The Citrus Bowl is now actually called the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl, I believe.
Oh, is it? Is it? Okay.
Yeah. No, maybe
I
not.
Know the
yeah, it's called the Cheez-It Citrus
Bowl.
It's called the Cheez-It...
Call it the Citrus
Cheez-It.
Bowl.
Yeah, it was Citrus Bowl for a while. It was the Cap one, but it's the Citrus Bowl. But now it's called the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl because whoever sponsored it previously is no longer sponsoring it, obviously. But Orlando's got several bowl games, so yeah, they would like to keep theirs. But I mean, what about Mobile? I mean, I imagine their whatever bowl they have, and Inglewood, California, I guess, isn't really you know. But you know, some of these are towns, mid-level towns. That, you know, this is probably a pretty
bowl,
big event.
I think that's probably a big deal for San Diego.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think you need to figure a way to keep some of those. Maybe use those in the semifinal round, you know, or I should say semifinal, the final 8. They let the first 8 teams play on-campus games and then go to, you know, utilize the bowl system for those. So that could do it. So
like,
I mean,
like the quarterfinals, yeah.
Yeah. And then
well,
maybe...
the problem is that I think that for that second round, there's going to be a big desire that those 4 bye teams, the top 4 teams that got the bye, are going to want their shot at having a home game for that playoff game. But, there's a lot to work out in terms of logistics of are they going to use some of the existing bowls? What's going to happen with the Orange Bowl and the Rose Bowl? Are they going to incorporate some of that into the 12-team playoff, or are they going to go for this giving home games to teams, which would diminish the impact or the role that any bowls might have? But,
yeah, well,
the
Rose Bowl has signed off as being part of the college, you know, the playoff package, however they're working it. But to what extent, I don't know. I mean, obviously some of these lesser bowls are going to, you know, I think if you have 12 teams in the playoff, then do another 12 teams in other bowls, you know what I mean? And just have them play, you know, in the 2 days. Like, you know, if you do it right, you could have them play the 2 days before the first round, you know, the play-in games or something, you know? I mean, somehow you could work that, I think. But, you know,
well,
20 bowls or 40 bowls.
The logistics of this. I mean, I really do have my doubts about whether the role that a lot of these less sort of lesser bowls will have in the in the post 12 team playoff world. I do think, like the point you're making about some of these other conferences that are hardly ever, if ever, to have a playoff, even have a team be in the 12 team playoff. You know, the MAC. The WAC,
yep.
The SWAC, you know, all these Sun Belt. What's going to happen there? There's probably will be some bowl games that will be available for these schools because that's all they'll have.
Okay, 38, 41. Okay, so there are 41.
You know,
bowl
games. By the way, that gets you to a another larger question, which I think is fascinating, is whether the current FCS needs to subdivide into two separate divisions. You know, maybe the Power Five being separate from the other FCS.
Yeah,
because it's harder for those other conferences to compete. And if they had a separate division, then they had their own championships. That would give them more to play for.
Yeah.
You could still have, you know, interconference play, but just have that division, you know. I don't know. I think that these are things that are all going to have to be looked at.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just about how does the playoff work logistically. It's also, you know, how do you incorporate bowls into it? What do you do with, you know, I mean, do you go with 12 teams in the playoff and then, like I said, 12 teams in other bowls and let that, you know, play in? Because you're talking 24 teams then versus what we currently have, which is 82 teams. Are in bowls, you know, and again, like some of those conferences, but again, you know, we already had it this year. We needed to reach out and get Rice at 5-7 into a bowl. So I think right there, you've answered the question of, you know, bowl saturation and all that stuff. I mean, there's going to have to be a happy medium. Some of these bowls are just going to be put out of existence. I think it's simple as that. I mean, we may not like it, but, you know, frankly, when we had about 10 bowls back in the day when we were kids, it worked. We liked it just fine. So, you know, I like the fact
that
they
may just be going the way of the typewriter, you know, just the way it is.
I mean, we may get back to a point where a Power Five team goes 8-4 and doesn't have a bowl that year. And just too bad. You know, it's a lot of teams won't like it. A lot of schools won't like it, but a lot of fans certainly won't like it. But by the same token, you know, we want a champion, and part of the way you do that is a playoff. And you know, people don't like the four-team format because it's a committee picking it. And I think it's – and that's the other thing. They're going to have to figure it a way for all-conference champions.
Yeah, and I suppose it's conceivable. I suppose it's conceivable, too, after a few years. They might go – I could see it going to 16-team playoff.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But, I mean, I think under a 12-team, Power Five – gets an automatic bid, and maybe three conferences rotating somehow, you know, three of the group of five conferences get a bid, and then, you know, and then two at large, something. I don't know. I mean, or four at large, whatever it is. But I, you know, I just don't know how you can, the playoff system can't be used to exclude non-Power Five teams. I don't think, you know, you can't, I mean, that's not a good look. But by the same token, 41 bowls isn't a good look, in my opinion, either. I mean, it's
no. But
if you do have a
12 team playoff, I do think there's going to be the occasional, you know, a MAC team or a WAC team, you know, name the conference that really has an outstanding year, you know, like before they go into the Big 12, like a Cincinnati has, or even in the four team, or a UCF can get in with the 12 teams. So there is going to be that opportunity, but is it possible a MAC team could get in? It's possible, but it doesn't seem very likely that you're going to have, you know, but I do think that there are some schools that have shown like a UCF You can come up with some other schools. Coastal Carolina, remember last couple of years before this year, they'd had some really good teams. A team like that could get in.
You know, I still can't believe that
I
still can't believe that Grayson McCall from Coastal Carolina entered the transfer portal. I mean, that just it seems bizarre to me. Notre Dame's starting quarterback is in the transfer portal. You know, I mean,
that's right.
It's just all really, really bizarre. So, who knows? Anyway, okay. Well, we've pretty much hit up everything that we could talk about. So, but thanks for calling in. Obviously.
You bet.
Do you I guess some final thoughts on Iowa's bowl, because I still haven't where do we even go from? I mean, literally, we have no Terry Roberts, although I think he's been injured. I know Justin.
Yeah, well, he hasn't played much this year at all, just like with Keegan Johnson.
Yeah.
But we'll be a little bit short, as we have been, even more so maybe, at wide receiver, although it'll be Reganey's last game. Ragainey's last game.
Yeah. Deontay Vines is going to be needed. I think I heard somewhere that he's available for the bowl too. So.
Okay. Brody Brex, as the season went along, played more and more and has become more of a solid guy, I think, at receiver. And last chance, I hadn't heard that LaPorta was opting out of the bowl game. So I'm assuming if he's healthy, he's playing.
Right. I haven't heard that either. Jack Campbell's playing. I mean, which, you know, he should be an example at all. Another one that you kind of wonder about, who's the back that it wasn't, who's our back Gavin Williams is in the portal. Now, he hasn't seen as much action, but he still will see decent action, and he is an Iowa guy, so I don't, you know. Iowa State
I'm not totally surprised there, because he was clearly playing third team. LaShawn Johnson and Caleb Johnson were ahead of. I was nervous we might lose Caleb Johnson. That would have been a hurt.
I don't see any reason.
I mean, he's
going to
be a star at Iowa, so why would he leave? You know?
Yeah.
He may be one and done next year. By the way, if he has a great year next year, I could see him going pro.
So he'd still need to. He has to be out 3 years. He still
would
have
he
to
have
be
to,
three
would
years
he not be eligible? Okay. Well, you know, hopefully we get 2 good years out of him then.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll see. So anyway, I guess I don't even know, though. How do you game plan? I mean, if you're a coach, I mean, how are we even going to game plan for this? That's what I don't, you know.
Well, you know, everybody's wanted to see Labus play however you pronounce his name. And I'm one of those people. So I kind of look forward to the game just to see. If he's got anything, because you know you're going to need more than one quarterback. So if you assume McNamara's coming in, he's going to be starting. We need to have a decent backup. We will need that. It's going to be either Labus or Carson May, and for both these, I don't know. I think they said McNamara will have 2 years of eligibility, if I'm not wrong.
It'll be important to have a backup. We just seem so depleted in certain spaces, in places. That's what worries me. I mean, again, Terry Roberts hasn't been playing much. Justin Jacobs hasn't played at all. So a couple of them, Keegan Johnson hasn't played much either. But Bruce, I mean, we're down Bruce.
Yeah.
But hopefully that means we don't see any more end rounds for a couple of weeks. I'd really like a season or two. Not a season. I'd really like it.
I mean, there's always a danger someone could go into the portal, right? But I kind of felt like the maximum period of that has come and gone, you know, in the couple weeks after the regular season. And we saw it kind of shake out, and it's been pretty quiet as far as I know.
Yeah.
It's basically ended for the last week, 10 days. So I'm hoping that's it for us. We'll see.
Yeah, we will see. So, okay, well, hey, I'll let you run. But thanks for being on, as always, and we'll talk again next week probably. And in the meantime, have a good weekend, and we will talk to you later, obviously by text and stuff. So,
sure. Take care, Hank.
Cool. Talk to you later. As always, knowledgeable and enjoyable, Hawkeye Mike. Thank him for being on. You had to know what we were like in college. I still can't get over the Sam Britton story. This guy that not only is he stealing luggage, but he's a pup handler. I forgot how it read out, but he handles the men that act like dogs at gay parties or whatever. It's just bizarre. I just don't get it. Just bizarre. Just don't, like I said, it's beyond comprehension. So, but he and I used to talk a lot. We talk a lot about SCTV. They would have done a great job with it. So, in the meantime, folks, thanks for being here, Vito. And boy, you came late a little bit to the chat room, but thanks for being here. Uncle Frank was here earlier. Sue from New Mexico was on the phones, along with Hawkeye Mike and Big Sister. And the phone numbers that I didn't recognize, they're not on now, but they dropped off, but they were on for a bit. In the meantime, folks, have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend. Stay vigilant. If this mask mandate stuff comes back, be prepared to fight back. Don't put up with it. There's no reason to. And you know what? I'll say it again. We need to really be watching our government. It's obvious that there has been collusion against not just conservatives, but against anyone who doesn't go along with the establishment. And that's got to stop. That's not what our founders wanted, and it's not what we should put up with. You know, we can blame it on this shadow entity or that one, but the bottom line is it's we, the citizens, that have to stand up and make the difference. So in that vein, have a great weekend, but I will play you out with the NWO theme.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Good night, all. Thanks for being here.